Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show featuring the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Greta Anderson. Thanks for joining me. For today's shows, we have three live interviews in our 410 Douglas studio. At the end of the hour, we will be talking tornadoes and other severe weather with Keith Morgan of Story County Emergency Management. So if thunderstorms and lightning is your thing, or even if it isn't, listen in as Keith tells us what to expect from this spring and what his team has planned for National Severe Weather Awareness Week later this month. We also talked to Drew Camp from the Ames Chamber of Commerce about the Ames Day at the Capitol planned for tomorrow. Every year, Ames Chamber members have a day to lobby state lawmakers and executives in Des Moines about the issues that affect their livelihoods. We'll hear from Drew and what the local business community is looking to gain from this year's legislative session. But for now, that is the Nevada Cubs fight song. And with us in the studio is Coach Kristen Meyer, together with two players from the state runner-up girls basketball team. Nevada played in the state 3A finals this past weekend against a team from Pocahontas. And although, unfortunately, they did not prevail, they certainly had a season worth talking about. So welcome to the show, Coach Meyer.
Thanks for having us on this morning.
And welcome to you, Abby Stevenson and Lexi Kadelka.
Hi.
Okay, now I imagine that not all of our listeners are followers of Cub basketball. So excuse me, gals, as I briefly fill them in. A lot was expected of this team as last year's state championship team, the Nevada Cubs, was a young group with all five starters returning. And in fact, the two players we have in the studio, the two who made the all-tournament team, are a sophomore and a junior. So Nevada will definitely be a team to watch next year as well. The team is known for having not just one, but two tall and talented high posts. Sophomore Lexi Kadelka in our studio and Katie Kassebaum, a senior. And between the two of you, you're getting close to 12 feet, am I right?
Yeah.
Okay. Another threat is their three-point shooters, including Abby Stevenson in the studio and another senior guard, Allie Fay. When both these two elements are clicking, the Cubs have an offense that's impossible to beat. And for a few thrilling minutes in the first quarter of Saturday's matchup, they were. Abby, you and Allie were sinking three-pointers like it was child's play.
That doesn't happen very often, but it was good that it came up in that game for a little bit. So,
right. And then, Coach Meyer, what's your analysis of what happened then? Later, you know, as the game turned around and kind of got hard to recapture.
Sure. We kind of came out, like you mentioned, knocked down a couple threes, got a little momentum. Then Katie got in a little bit of foul trouble, and Pocahontas really kind of took over in their transition. So when we would miss a shot, they got down the floor really quick and were able to get a few buckets out of fast break. And then, I'm sure you'll talk about Ellie Ruffridge later, but she's one of the best players in the state, and she kind of took over a little bit. We had a hard time slowing her down, and then when we stopped her, she has some nice teammates who can knock down some outside shots. So we weren't quite able to get our offense rolling as much in the second and third quarters as we would have liked, but, they're a great team. We knew that coming in, that they'd be a challenge, so they just outplayed us a little bit on Saturday.
Yeah, that Ellie Ruffridge, she's a speedy little guard and just amazing ball handling. The whole team is rather short, you know, small, but they just had amazing ball handling. And it was a pleasure to watch, even though it was sad to see you guys struggling against her penetration. So let's talk a little bit about the mental aspects of the game with you girls. What did it feel like to be down on the floor again on Saturday? This was, a rerun, a total repeat of last year's championship. How did that affect your mindset? And as things progressed, any thoughts on what happened there?
Really, we just come down, we always look forward to going down to play down there. It's such a great experience. We love it down there. It just feels like another basketball game when you play on the court. You really just, you don't really feel the difference of that many people there to watch you, and it's a great experience down there to be on the court. So that's always lots of fun to be looking forward to that. And then we prepare a lot for the games with scouting reports and with practices, and so we feel pretty prepared mentally and, like, just ready for the game, too. Just that really helps, and so we come down with lots of confidence going down there.
And so, Coach Meyer, it seems like one of your jobs as coach is to talk up the other team in the news and probably to your girls how good they are and so forth. And now that the season's over, you have an opportunity to talk up your own girls a little bit. And I wondered if you could tell us what kind of particularly inspires you about this group of girls that you've had the opportunity to work with 2 years in a row.
Well, I think this group, to achieve this much success, is, you know, kind of out of the ordinary. And we've got a great group of kids coming through right now in all of our sports. And I guess the key to this group, I think, is their competitiveness. I've mentioned that a number of times throughout the season. And they just enjoy playing. They like playing with each other. They like competing against other teams. They work hard in practice. They're very coachable. And they're just kind of a fun group to be around. So, you know, as a coach, it makes our job's pretty easy, our coaching staff, and we look forward to coming to practice every day and preparing for the games with this group.
Okay. And last fall, we had in the state championship Nevada Cubs volleyball team in the studio. Abby here was among them. And we heard about an interesting method that Coach Bauman used to focus players' mind on practice. From what I understand, he has you journal about what you're doing before and after the practice so you can reflect on, you know, your goals and objectives. The basketball team, I know, also has an interesting team-building kind of method that you use at the end of practices, especially at the beginning of the year when you're getting to know each other and getting enthusiasm going. Would you like to talk about that, or the girls could?
I'll start and then they can add things. This year we added something new. We called them pride cards. To be honest, I wasn't great about it throughout the rest of the season. But at the beginning of the season, as you mentioned, we just had little slips of paper and we had our Nevada girls basketball stamp on it. It has the word pride, work hard, play smart, have fun. And at the end of practice, they would just write one of those for a teammate, pointing out something that they noticed from their teammate, a specific drill they worked hard in or something they did well from practice, just as that little reminder of, you know, I noticed that. That was important that you gave a great effort in that drill, or you dove on the ground for that ball, or you made me feel better about myself this certain time, or you were a good teammate in this drill. So, you know, as I said, I wasn't as good about it throughout the January and February practices. But then I think they did a better job just of complimenting each other vocally throughout practices. And, you know, I liked the idea of it to help you look for positive things in your teammates, because in sports, especially with coaches, we always look for what we can fix or what we can improve. So it's always good to have that reminder of what are we doing well.
Right. I know it meant a lot to Nadia, who is just starting with you guys. My exchange daughter was practicing with the whole team and got a few cards. And so what did it mean to you girls, Abby and Lexi, to do that? What was that like?
It was always good to get compliments after practice, especially maybe if you had a tough practice or something. And so that was always really good. And then also it kind of helps with, like, the new people who are coming into our program, like the freshmen and for the sophomores who didn't practice with us last year or something. So to make them feel like they're part of the team and to give them those type of compliments really, I think, probably helped them a lot. So they would look forward to come back to practice every day and practice with us. So I thought the cards were pretty good for not only us to get good compliments, but it was good for the younger people too.
You could tape them in your lockers, and I feel like it'd just be something you would look forward to looking at when you go to your locker or something before or after practice.
That's neat. Okay. So this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm talking with Coach Meyer of the Nevada High School state runner-up girls basketball team. Coach, let's talk a moment about the remarkable success of girls athletics in general at Nevada High School. We've talked about the volleyball team winning states this year, the basketball team, two state championship games in a row, and soccer, I understand. They've been to states. Fill us in. What makes these girls so competitive?
That's a good question. I think, you know, part of it is right now we've got a group of girls going through that have some natural abilities as well. You know, as you mentioned, we have some height. We've got some speed. And then beyond that, they've worked very hard on their skills. You know, they've been playing these sports since they were young. They've had parents who got them involved or even just took them outside to shoot baskets or kick around the soccer ball. And we've been pretty lucky that way to just have a whole group throughout, you know, 9th through 12th grade of girls that enjoy playing and are willing to put in the extra time. You come into the gym in the summer, every morning these girls are in there, whether it's volleyball open gym, basketball open gym, they're weightlifting, you know, soccer got done in the summer, and then they're playing or they're running track. Golf made it to state the past few years. So I think their dedication to all of the sports is just really remarkable.
And some of the girls, like Abby here, play a lot of sports. You do volleyball, basketball, track. Anything else?
I do soccer.
Soccer.
Yeah.
She's a speedster, sure we got so she's in track, and I can see your skills doing very well with soccer too. Whereas Lexi, you're as the team's high scorer, just a sophomore, you've decided to focus just on basketball.
I throw in track, but mainly basketball.
You throw. That makes sense. And so do you go to, like, camps during the summer or go to open gym here at Nevada?
Yeah, I do a lot of camps. I play for an AAU team, All Iowa Tech, so I get a lot of summertime playing.
All right. Well, it shows. You've definitely developed some awesome skills already. And you two are going to go on to play next year without a couple of your starting teammates, seniors Allie Fay and Katie Kassebaum, also Amaris Hornbuckle. What legacy, if you can use such a big word, do you think they've had? What do you think you learned from them that you're going to put into practice and take onto the court next year?
They both definitely have a sense of urgencies in practice, and they've helped me become the player I am in practice. Getting to practice against Katie almost every day has been a blessing, I guess you could say.
Right, because she's almost your height. And
Just really, like Lexi kind of said, they've taught us a lot of things. Like, they've been great role models to us. They've set tones in practice of, like, competitive levels and just, I mean, for Katie and Lexi, that's a huge, like, competitive thing. They play one-on-one against each other a lot, so just they were getting better every single day just because going against somebody that's their own height, and they have such a, like, a common level skill of basketball. So it was just awesome to see both of them, like, get better every single day. And then even just, like, Allie would work to get all of us other guards better. I mean, she's a great shooter, so she sets a great example by that. So it was just awesome to have those two in our gym. And Amaris gave such, like, she was always just happy in the gym. And so that was awesome to have that type of just sense to her. And so that was awesome to have her there, too. We're going to miss them a lot, so.
Yeah.
And it sounds like there's some leadership in this room, though, that will help carry you on. Well, it's never fun to end the season with a loss, but basically that's what the vast majority of teams must do. Coach Meyer, what did you tell the girls after Saturday's championship defeat? And
oh, wow. To be honest, I don't really remember. I think we were all just, you know, we felt the sting of the loss, but we've got so much to be proud of. These girls have really worked to give Nevada girls basketball a good name across the state. And, you know, one game that Pocahontas was a little bit better than us at, you know, it's not a good representation of the past 2 years. We have so many other things to be proud of and that we've worked hard to achieve. And I think that's, you know, the message moving forward, especially for our seniors. Thank you for everything that they gave us. And, you know, once the sting wears off a little bit, we can look back and see all the great things that we accomplished.
All right. Any further reflections from you? Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Lexi Kudelka, a sophomore high post, Abby Stevenson, a guard, a junior, and both of you made all tournament. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Coach Kristen Meyer, and I understand that the all-state team will be announced this week?
Correct.
Okay, so that's something for us all to look out for in the newspaper. So congratulations, all of you, on a very winning season, 23-4, and thank you for coming to Local Talk.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us on.
And that was the Nevada Fight song, and this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for the day, Greta Anderson, and I've been joined by Drew Kemp of the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Drew is the Director of Government Relations and Story County Community Outreach for the Ames Chamber, and those two roles really go together for your appearance here today. You're doing community outreach by coming onto our show, and you're doing a whole lot of government relations in an event you have planned for tomorrow down in Des Moines. Care to tell the audience about that event?
Oh, sure. Tomorrow we have the 2016 Ames Day at the Capitol down at the State Capitol Complex in Des Moines. And what it basically entails is from 11:30 to 1 p.m., there will be a community showcase where we have quite a few really great sponsors. And those sponsors are the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau, Ames Laboratory, Barilla, Beringer Ingelheim, City of Ames, Des Moines Area Community College, Iowa State, Renewable Energy Group, Workiva, and then the Ames Chamber of Commerce will also all have a booth down in the Capitol Rotunda where we can engage legislators, state officials, staff, and other individuals in the Capitol Rotunda and really showcase Ames and the great things that we have to offer here in this community, the Ames and Story County community.
Okay, and so you're showcasing Ames, and you're also trying to draw legislators and executives who work down in Des Moines into conversation about the kinds of things that make Ames thrive that they play a part in.
Very much so, yes. We've seen a lot of really good growth here in the community, whether it be with the Beringer Ingelheim Project or Barilla's development of a gluten-free facility within their current operation in Ames, Des Moines Area Community College is going to be expanding its footprint here in the community. Iowa State Research Park continues to grow. Renewable Energy Group has seen expansion, and Workiva has seen expansion as well. And a lot of that has come due to the assistance the state has provided with some of their programs and Economic Development Authority.
Right. Now, you mentioned Beringer Ingelheim. That was a name that I hadn't heard of before I did my research for this story. Beringer Ingelheim Vet Medica. Can you tell us what that company is about?
They're a veterinary medicine, pharmaceutical, and animal health company, and they're out of Europe. And they're one of the biggest in the world, actually. And they're building a new facility down in the research park. And the ribbon cutting is actually going to be on April 21st. And we're really looking forward to that brilliant new facility. If you can see it off of Highway 30, it's really a beautiful sight to see.
Okay. And then Workiva, that's a name that's familiar. Barilla, you mentioned they're having a gluten-free facility.
Yeah, they did. They added a gluten-free facility, and quite a bit of the gluten-free products provided to the U.S. come out of that facility. So it's pretty exciting that we have that as well. And we're only one of two Barilla facilities in the U.S., so that's very exciting as well.
Okay. And the Renewable Energy Group, REG. They're doing ethanol?
Biodiesel. Yes, they develop biodiesel. They've acquired some plants actually just recently in Wisconsin. They acquired a plant. So they continue to expand, and they actually have their headquarters there off of Interstate 35, and then they actually expanded a little bit due to employee growth. They bought a building on Alexander and have some employees over there too, which we're really excited about because they're a great company, and they're one of many listed on here that are very supportive of the Chamber of Commerce, and we're very grateful for that.
And you mentioned the Iowa Economic Development Authority. Mm-hmm. Talk about some of the programs that they have that have helped these companies expand?
Well, the biggest one is going to be the High Quality Jobs Program. And companies that would have benefited from that on this list would be Barilla, Boehringer Ingelheim, and Workiva have recently benefited from this program, which is based on the wage threshold of your jobs, which is kind of keeping with the name, the High Quality Jobs Program. They want to make sure that they're high-paying, good-paying jobs that you're going to be expanding when you invest in a project like those companies have done. And we've been very happy with the assistance that the Economic Development Authority has been able to provide us. They also have some research activities tax credits as well. Those are actually refundable as well. So that's something that has been very helpful to some of these companies as they expand and grow as well.
Okay, so a company can get tax credits at a graduated level depending on how many high quality, in other words, good paying jobs they can introduce through that expansion.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. So during the lunch hour, you're going to all be there in the rotunda at booths, and then Hickory Park.
Hickory Park. That's the staple that we have always brought down there. It kind of hits you right in the face when you walk in. You can tell it's Ames Day because that barbecue smell just radiates throughout the entire Capitol, and everyone's always super excited about it. I'll be down there doing some lobbying, and people are already talking about it a month out. Say, hey, I saw on Tuesday the 8th is Ames Day. I'm looking forward to it. It's just it's a very popular and kind of famous day down at the Capitol, and we always love going down there and kind of providing one of our Ames staples, like I said, Hickory Park, to the entire to all the individuals assembled at the rotunda and kind of showcase our community and what we have to offer.
So that just draws them in, and then you can sort of corner them about your issues. But later in the day, you have specific meetings set up with legislative leaders to promote certain legislation.
That's correct. Yes, we will be meeting with legislative leadership from the leaders in both the House and the Senate and from the Democratic and Republican Party. And excuse me. And we have some set issues that we will be talking to them about. The meetings will be about 25 minutes long, so they'll have some time to kind of introduce themselves and the things that they're working on in their caucus and in their respective chambers. And then we'll have some issues that we for sure want to be covering with them as some of our priority policy issues.
Okay, so share with us, what are the Ames business community, what is the Ames business community interested in legislatively?
Our biggest policy priority this year, as it was last year, is the renewable chemical tax credit. And what that would do is that would incentivize the use of byproducts from the ethanol, biodiesel production operations and allow them to be used to put back as inputs in biomass feedstocks into making things such as plastics and biochar and carbon wire at a much lower cost, because most of those are right now are currently used with petrochemicals, and that's a little bit more expensive. And we have a vast supply of these biomass products being produced, being that Iowa is such a heavy ag state with soybeans and corn. We really have that feedstock. We have some of the highest amounts of feedstock in the country, and we can really, if we get this tax credit passed, which would incentivize production on a 5 cents per pound basis, it would really allow us to kind of get in a leadership position, much like we were able to do with the ethanol industry about 15, 20 years ago. So we're really hoping that we can get in on the ground floor. We would be the first state to have this kind of incentive in place. And with the infrastructure Iowa State currently has, it's something that we really feel that we could be catapulted right into a leadership spot, and we're really looking forward to it. It's passed the House twice last year, and then this year it's currently waiting to be passed out of the House Ways and Means Committee. And then it just on Thursday passed the Senate Ways and Means Committee, which is where it was stalled and ultimately died last session. So that was a very big deal, and we were very happy to see it passed out of there. And we appreciate the support that the 14 senators who voted for it out of that committee provided.
Okay, so I need a little help understanding this. You're incentivizing, in other words, you're subsidizing the...
It's a tax credit. You have to be actually producing before you can even get the tax credit.
Okay.
So you have to actually produce that feedstock and that product from those biomass inputs to be able to even claim the tax credit. And if you're a company that's 5 years or newer, you can get up to $1 million in tax credits. And if you're 5 years or older, you can get up to $500,000 in tax credits.
Okay.
And you can only get it five times.
So a biomass input.
Mm-hmm. There's 40 inputs that were kind of listed, and they came from the Department of Energy. So there's a set amount of inputs, so there's no question as to what qualifies. So there's about these 40 products that if you're producing those and using those as inputs, you would qualify for this tax credit.
So give me an example of what one of those inputs would be. Like, is corn an input? Like
byproduct of corn would be like lignin is a big one, and then so is glycerol. Polymers are a big one. Right now, there's actually out at the BioCentury Research Farm, they actually have a biopolymer processing facility, and they partnered with the Iowa Department of Transportation to actually make bioasphalt, and they're using them already out. They're using that product out on the roads right now, and it's cheaper to make using these inputs than it would be using the other inputs they had in the past. And that's an example of what some of the infrastructure Iowa State already has in place in this regard.
Okay, so the goal is to get more locally sourced stuff, biomaterials.
Biomass, yep.
Biomass into the productions that we do here already locally, yep. Also to stimulate different kinds and new kinds of production?
Very much so. And it's really a value-added agriculture incentive because, as you can see, we're taking these products from ag that we obviously as an ag state have plenty of, and we want to be adding value to them by putting them through this process and then having these biomass products come out and the final products that are high-value products and can make these products ultimately at a cheaper price than, say, a petrochemical would be able to.
Okay.
So I'm not a chemist, but that's kind of how I understand it.
Right. Okay. So if we subsidize it a little bit now, we're on the path toward separating ourselves more and more from the petrol industry.
Potentially. And we're just really excited because, like I said, it could make us a leader once again in an industry like we have in ethanol. And you don't get that chance very often in a national and international market, in an international market such as this.
Okay. So that's one of the big pushes that your group is going to make, the Ames Chamber of Commerce, down in Des Moines tomorrow when you speak with legislators. What are some of the other programs that you would like to see helped out by the legislature?
There's also a bill that's in the Senate Appropriations Committee right now. It's called Enhance Iowa. It's a quality of life initiative, and that's something that we supported last year in a different form. There's been some improvements made to this year's bill, but we'll be supporting that as well. And what that bill would entail is if there's $100 million left in the ending fund balance at the end of the session, $25 million would get siphoned off for this Enhance Iowa program. $14 million of that $25 would be put into an Enhance Iowa fund, and projects would be reviewed by a board that would be very similar to the Vision Iowa board. And they would have to be pre-qualified projects, and then they'd be assessed, and then they would award financial assistance of that $14 million to qualified projects who had applied. And then another $11 million would go down and siphon into funds for things such as sports tourism, water quality and watershed management, things like the REAP program and kind of trails and recreation. So that's something with quality of life being such an important part of economic development and just our community in general. I think Story County residents would really say that we have a high quality of life here, and anything we can do to assist with that is definitely something we want to get behind.
Okay, so that would be using leftover funds from the budget. It might be zero. It might be $50 million.
It has to be $100 million for that $25 million to get siphoned off.
Okay. It has to be a whole $100 million
in extra funds at the end of the
ending
fund balance.
They are really tight down there, aren't they?
They are. Right now it's a tight budget year, and the Revenue Estimating Conference is set to come out on March 16th with some new projections, which will be the final numbers they have to work with as they work through the budget for FY 2017. So that's something we'll be watching with a close full eye as well, and probably be asking a little bit about to see if we can get any insight onto what they may anticipate seeing in those numbers.
Okay, so that's the Iowa Quality of Life Fund.
That's the Enhance Iowa Fund.
Okay, Enhance Iowa Fund.
Yep. And then there's also some proposed reforms to tax increment financing, which is something that economic development organizations are always defending each year, because especially in a community like Ames, we've been very responsible with the use of our TIF dollars, as has Story County. For example, we don't have that many TIF districts here in town. One of the most recent uses would be down in the research park for the infrastructure deployed down to the Economic Development Hub. And we've already seen expansion there. We're already seeing investment with the Economic Development Hub, Ames Rec and Fitness provisions going in down there. So we've already seen some economic impact from that infrastructure being deployed from TIF funds. So that would be an example of how we've positively used those funds and why we feel that we shouldn't necessarily that we need to defend any changes to those to the TIF law that is currently in existence, because we are using it responsibly and we feel that that is something that we shouldn't be penalized for.
Okay, so TIF can be kind of controversial, it sounds mm-hmm. like. And that's tax increment financing. And basically, tell me if I'm correct, it gives it creates regions or parts of the
districts,
yep. districts where any development that occurs there, they get a huge tax break sort of at the beginning and then it tapers off.
It's based on – you set up the – in simple terms, you set up a district and you have to have a plan for that district. And then – excuse me. Once you decide that there's a project, you set a base valuation at that time for a tax valuation, and then any improvements that are made above that tax, that base valuation, can then be incentivized with that tax incentive and that abatement. And it's on a declining scale as it goes out. That's how Ames does it. So, and Ames has been very responsible as far as with their scale and with the deployment, like I said. So that's something why we really want to make sure we're getting those good examples, because they hear a lot more about the negative examples. I don't want to pick on anyone and say anything, but I think some of us know about some of the negative examples. And the thing is, like I said, Ames has used it very responsibly, and we think that we should be able to continue to use it as a flexible and important economic development tool.
Okay, so the negative examples would be like, why are you subsidizing this business from a foreign country coming in, not even creating many jobs, that kind of thing?
Probably more so, sometimes you'll see a big investment in a public entity and they aren't tax producing entities. And that's something that raises a red flag sometimes. That's kind of what I meant more so.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, boy, I have so much to learn and you're helping us out here, informing all of us as much as we can understand. So, anything else that you're going to be talking to legislators about tomorrow?
There's actually also the issue of tax coupling is something we've heard from some of our small business owners. They usually do it early in the session, pair the state tax code with the federal tax code. And there was some tax incentives that were passed at the end of the federal fiscal, at the end of the calendar year by the federal government. And if they don't get paired by the state government, some businesses will be paying quite a bit more in taxes. They already have done an extension for commercial fisheries and farmers because of the impacts on them from March 1st to April 30th. For example, in one article I saw, if this tax coupling doesn't happen, $62,000 extra could be paid by a farmer in town. I saw another one that a small business owner could possibly have to pay an extra $16,000 in taxes if coupling doesn't happen. There's discussions at the leadership level going on down there, and that's kind of what we'll want to find out where they stand right now on moving forward on possibly finding some amenable terms on that issue.
Okay, so the Ames Chamber has and chambers of commerce around the country and the National Chamber of Commerce have the view of government that government can be very helpful in assisting business and economic development, that is one of the roles of government.
They certainly can. We have seen that, you know, in projects like I listed before, like Workiva and Beringer Ingelheim and the Barilla project, they certainly can be very much of assistance in helping provide some financial incentives to help move an expansion or retention project forward. And that's a very important piece because in our business retention and expansion is about 75-80% of the job growth you're going to see. So we've been very happy that we've been able to expand these companies here in Ames and expand their footprint here for the future.
Right. I recently read a study by the Center for Policy and Budget Priorities that really made that point that almost everywhere in the country, it's really the development of existing workplaces that creates new jobs, much more so than the importation of a business from outside.
Yes, that is very much the case most of the time in our business, yes.
Well, and like you said, we have some great examples of that here in Ames.
Yep, very much so. Yeah, we're very fortunate to have some very great companies here in the community, and we continue to see them and to expand here, which we're very happy about.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Drew Camp from the Ames Chamber of Commerce, for coming in, telling us what's going to be happening down in the Capitol Rotunda tomorrow at lunchtime.
Yep.
Some barbecue smell. We'll just have to imagine it out here in Ames.
You might be able to smell it all the way up here.
Okay.
Well, we're going to be serving about 600 people.
All right. Well, good luck to you in advancing the interests of Ames business community.
All right. Thank you very much. We look forward to a good 2016 Ames Day at the Capitol. And that was Tornado by the Hillbilly Moon Explosion. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We're joined now by Keith Morgan of Emergency Management Services to talk about tornadoes and all kinds of severe spring weather. Welcome, Keith.
Well, thanks, and quite an appropriate lead-in song.
And I understand your team has already been preparing for whatever weather a spring may bring.
Right. We started already on March 1st. We had our storm spotters training, which is some training where we bring the community out and the community becomes a part of our overall efforts to take care of ourselves. These storm spotters, they get trained by the National Weather Service, who actually comes out and does some training on this. And these folks are out there. And what they do is they provide eyes on the ground. The radar can only see down so far. And these folks are down on the ground, and they're trained to be able to recognize certain cloud formations. And sometimes what the clouds look like might look like a tornado, but not actually a tornado, or else being able to report things in quantities that the National Weather Service can better translate into what's going on the ground. For instance, hail. You know, people say it's marble-sized hail, but if you've ever played marbles, there's a whole bunch of different sizes of marbles, so they have different criteria for reporting that in the wind. So these folks are going to be out there. They're going to report back to the National Weather Service, give them real ground truth on what's going on out there. They'll be able to give their information in specific formats. And also, very importantly, the National Weather Service taught them how to do it safely. So often you see the people out there with their taking videos of tornadoes when really they should be seeking shelter. But National Weather Service also stresses that aspect to it.
Okay. So I have in your notes here that you 35 people showed up for this training.
Yes, we did. We had all sorts of folks show up. A couple of them were part of our ham radio operators, our Aries folks, that will report via their ham radios directly back down into the National Weather Service. A lot of them are our first responders, our law enforcement, and our I will rely on our volunteer fire departments. I'll ask them to go out and be storm spotters when I see storms starting to come in. So these folks are also trained to give very specific information, and some of them were just citizens that were interested.
So that's interesting. When you see a storm coming in, developing, you actually make a few phone calls to folks and say, what's going on in your neighborhood?
What we have set up is, as they can call out the fire departments for fires, I can request through the Story County Sheriff's Office dispatch to dispatch our volunteer fire departments that will go out and actually set themselves up so that they'll see this weather coming on in so that they can report it back via our public safety radio channels back to me. And then via the internet, I'll put that into the National Weather Service. So that way we can collect it. It also gives me a chance to see what's going on and kind of predict where my services might be needed in the future. It also helps us determine whether it's appropriate to activate the outdoor warning sirens by getting that information. Because, again, the radars can only do so much, and many times listening to what our storm spotters are saying can give us an idea that we might be exceeding 70-mile-an-hour winds, or we have greater than golf ball size hail out there.
Or that maybe there isn't that big a deal and you don't want to cry wolf.
Exactly right. That's one of the big issues that we always have in trying to do this warning information. If you have people go down to their basements when there's nothing going on or after the storm has already gone past, then they lose confidence in our warning. So it's a very tricky balance that we put out there as to when do we put out these warnings and when do we hold off. These storms, it's incredible when you're sitting there watching them. They'll be growing, and just about the time you're going to request a storm warning be put out, the storm will die on you. So it's still an imperfect science, but we're getting much better at accurately predicting where these warnings need to be activated.
Well, it sounds like an interesting blend of technology, communicating with getting everybody linked up, but also some real old-fashioned cloud interpretation.
Oh, definitely. It's like I said, people with being able to actually look at the clouds and sense what's happening for the winds, it just can't be beat.
Okay, so I understand that there is something called Severe Weather Awareness Week, and that's coming up later in March.
Sure. Starting March 21st, in conjunction with the National Weather Service, what we do is we try and go through and educate the public before we get into the storm season on the different risks that are out there with the storm so that they can recognize when they're starting to get into a situation that they need to be more careful. It starts on Monday with the severe thunderstorms, which is the one that's most common and has a lot of different threats associated with
it. Okay, so that's Monday, March 21st. That's the week we'll be coming back from spring break, many of us.
Exactly. And it seems like it's awful early, but we are really starting to move into the threat time right now, and it extends all the way, especially for tornadoes, into June. So we're doing a little bit ahead of time so people will have a chance to check through and make sure they've got all that stuff that they should have for the upcoming storm season.
So each day has a theme. Each day of this week has a theme, and then you're going to be expounding upon that theme how?
We're going to be putting it out through our Facebook page. We'll be putting out every day, we'll be putting out something on the different themes, starting with severe thunderstorm warnings, weather warnings. How can people be aware of what's going on out there and get that warning that we were talking about when they needed it? And Wednesday is going to be the big one. It's when we're talking about tornadoes, and there'll actually be a activation of the tornado outdoor warning sirens and also the National Weather Service warning system. And then Thursday we'll be talking about family preparedness, again, checking those kits and making sure you've got everything in them. And then it culminates on Friday with flash floods.
Okay. So that's the overview. Let's go into a few of the details of each of those topics. For thunderstorms, what do we need to know when there's a thunderstorm coming? I mean, there's a lot of common knowledge, but then there's a lot of maybe common ignorance.
Well, let's start with the storm is coming, and you start hearing thunder. people oftentimes think, well, it's a long ways off in the distance, but actually lightning can strike many, many miles away from the actual cell itself. So if you can hear thunder, you ought to start thinking about getting in and getting out of the danger of being struck by lightning, because lightning is a pretty high killer of folks out there, because people don't treat it with the respect that they should be. So if you can hear it, first off, it's a threat. Get away from tall object. I know that makes sense, but a lot of times in the middle of a thunderstorm, you want to get out of the rain, so you get near a tree, which is what is attracting the lightning and often a lot of times. One of the main things that I really encourage people to think about is when you're at a sporting event and you can start to hear thunder, take care of yourself. Even if they don't call the sporting event, maybe it's time for you to move away from and go inside and get protection away from the lightning.
Okay. So I actually love a good thunderstorm when I'm inside.
Yeah, I'm with you. I love to watch them. I've lived in many different places where you can watch them coming from a long ways away. But it is incredible the amount of power that is in them. And when you go outside and you see that huge cumulus with the anvil on top of it, it's awesome the amount of energy that's being stored up and released in that system.
Can you unpack that picture for us? A huge cumulus with an anvil on top. What is that anvil?
The anvil really, if you see one of those, then that means that's a pretty heavy storm. What it is the energy is pulling a lot of the it's rising very, very rapidly, and it's actually rising to the point where it gets up and high-level winds are pushing the top of the cloud. Instead of the cloud continuing to go on up, it's reached such a high level that the higher-level winds are flattening out the top of it. And that indicates to you that is a very, very intense storm that's out there. And if you see a line of those coming towards you, you need to be considering getting to some place where you can have good shelter.
Okay, so that's a flat-top cloud.
Yes, it's you'll see a point at the very top of the cloud as opposed to just rising up vertically.
Okay, and any suggestions for if you're driving, you just pull over to the side of the road or...
You never know what you're going to run into. Oftentimes, you'll be out there driving, and you'll drive into a wall of rain. So if you do start to see that rain, maybe consider that it's time to pull off and let the storm go in front of you. There's always the risk of if you slow down and somebody else doesn't, that they can run into you. But if you're going too fast, you run into somebody else. So it's usually just the best time to pull off to the side and get a cup of coffee.
Okay, and then we have the subject on Tuesday of weather warnings and local weather radios. I don't know what I'm here in the radio business, and I don't even know what a weather radio is.
A weather radio is specifically designed to take in warnings from the National Weather Service. So I have one. It sits beside my bed, and about 99% of the time, nothing comes out of it. But it's tuned so that when the National Weather Service sends out either a watch or a warning, it will activate a warning tone that will let you know something's going on. You push the button, and then you can listen to the actual warning, whether it's flash flood warning, high winds, hail, or what the kind of warning is out there. So they're very good. People oftentimes says, well, I watch TV. TV isn't going to wake you up at 2 a.m. in the morning and notify you of the threat that's out there. So that's what's really good. Another thing is people will say, well, they're awful loud. That's exactly right. They're designed to be awful loud so that if you're soundly asleep, it'll wake you up. Or even if you're downstairs, you'll hear something going on and you'll go upstairs, get to your National Weather Radio, check out what it is. And it's the one of the best ways to get warnings. The good thing is you can tune it so that it will only activate if there's a warning in your county, or as I recommend to people, if you live right on the border of the county, for instance, next to Boone, put Boone's in there too so that you can hear far enough out in advance that something's going on so that you can get up and check out the weather and take appropriate actions.
Okay, now, and just to circle back to our conversation earlier, when the National Weather Service issues a warning or a watch, is that based on information that you've given them, or is that strictly based on their radar?
It's based on all of that. They're looking at their radar. Sometimes they will, for instance, call a tornado warning just by what they're seeing on the radar, and their radars are getting much more sensitive so they can identify that. But if they have, from a trained storm spotter, an actual visual sighting of a tornado, that could be another part of their criteria to activate it. Or the combination of the two, if they're seeing something on the radar that might look like a tornado and they're hearing from the storm spotters that, yes, I have a cloud that's rotating here, then they might activate for a tornado warning.
Now, everybody loves phone apps. I'm wondering if there's a good phone app for weather emergencies and things like that.
A lot of the TV stations have very good apps that will, again, give you a lot of warning that something's coming up, and it'll be real time. It's while you're out and about. All of that is great, great information for you to have, and it'll follow you real time where you go. So, yes, I look them over, find out which one has the features that you want to be able to be tuned to the threats you're looking for and where it activates for.
Okay. And then we have just a few moments. Can we talk about flooding? Because that seems to be a huge issue that comes along in the spring.
The flash flooding is one of the most dangerous things. In fact, most of weather-related deaths are due to flooding. And that's because especially the flash flooding will oftentimes go across the road. People will think, oh, it's just a little bit of water. But what they don't realize is that 18 to 24 inches of water can wash a car off a road. And also, you don't know what's happened underneath that water. The road may not even be there anymore when you go to drive across it. So during the daytime, if you see water, just don't go there. Turn around. Don't drown. Very, very true. We had to rescue a girl off the top of a car over by Gilbert last spring because she got into water. The car stalled, and she was stuck out in the middle of the stream, and she was lucky that the water didn't continue to wash the car away. At night, it's even more important because you don't even see the water out there until you drive into it. So if there's flash flooding going on, it's nighttime. It's like I was talking about for the winter storms. Don't go out there if you don't have to because you may not see it and you may run into it. Walking across it also can be very, very dangerous. Just about 6 inches of very rapidly moving water can sweep you off your feet, or there may be a hole there that you don't see. You step into it and you're washed away. So people don't treat flash flooding with the respect that they should.
Okay, so if you see the reflection of water ahead of you, you should really slow your car very slow and then kind of proceed.
Don't even go into it because you oftentimes, again, you don't know what's been happening with the road underneath it. It may not even be there as you think that you're going to creep through it. Back up, go around, find a dry path to get across around. It may take you a little bit longer, but you'll get there alive.
Okay. So sometimes people are feeling so desperate, you know, wanting to get home, wanting to get back to safety, that they get even deeper into trouble.
Get-home-itis is what we used to call it in my previous life, and that will kill people, honestly. They're in just such a hurry that they never make it home because they push their luck and they get themselves into a situation that they weren't anticipating. And again, the chances are that if you get into a flooding situation, at best you'll lose your car. At worst, you might lose your life.
Okay. Well, Keith Morgan, thanks so much for being our coach, helping us keep ourselves safe in this upcoming spring season.
No problem.
And we'll see you again next month. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I've been your host, Greta Anderson. We started out the show with Kristen Meyer, coach of the Nevada High School girls basketball team and two all-tournament players from last weekend's runner-up finish, sophomore Lexi Kudelka and Abby Stevenson. We then heard from Drew Camp of Ames Chamber of Commerce about Ames Day at the Capitol in Des Moines tomorrow, and finally Keith Morgan of Story County Emergency Management. Local Talk will be broadcast at noon and 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests along with relevant links to today's stories. And you can like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter and get updates on all of our show postings in your news feed. Thanks to our webmaster, Ron Carson, for making that possible. Local Talk was engineered by Nadia Abdelazim. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was the Nevada Cub Fight Song and Tornado by Hillbilly Moon Explosion. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878, or contact us through our website, khoyfm.org. As listener, you are the most important member of our team, so please spread the word about what we're doing here and think about how you or your organization might benefit from partnering with KHOI. Have a great day, and we'll see you again on the radio.